This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio.
Broadway's my beat, from Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world.
Broadway's My Beat, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
Broadway, it's a marketplace of the wanderers, the displaced. A glittering bazaar where the stalls are lighted in neon. And you can buy. You buy an identity or a reason or a memory that was stolen from you. You think it belongs to you. But you're wrong. The hawkers of the night sold it. But only for the minutes of the night. More, you must buy all over again. It's Broadway, my beat. Your squad car stabs, tears, rips through the city, and its wail is a piece of broken glass that slashes across the city's face. And you see the terror, silent and quick, in the blur of the city making way for you. And finally, you're there, in the place of the violent dead. It's an expensive room in an expensive hotel, and a dead girl lies sprawled on the floor like an exhausted child, and her dress makes a blob of crimson in the room. There are shadows in attendance. Then one detaches itself and clutches onto you and screams.
You'll believe me, won't you, mister? I don't know who you are, but you'll believe me. Someone's got to. That
Take
girl...
your hands off the man, Mr. Jeffrey.
Don't pay any attention to him, mister. He's greedy. He just wants it all cut and dried. The girl murdered, and he says
Take your hands off the man.
All right. I'll sit down. See, I'm cooperative.
Just sit down and shut up, Mr. Jeffries. That's right. That's a good boy. You must be Clover. I've seen your face, heard your name.
Oh, and you?
Joe Graham, house detective. Don't get me wrong, Clover. I'm usually gentle as a kitten without paying guests. But Mr. Jeffries...
Are you from the police, Mr. Clover? I'm glad. I'll tell you exactly how it happened. I'll tell you everything.
Get back in your chair, Mr. Jeffries. I'll tell a detective.
I'd rather hear it from Mr. Jeffries.
Oh, to each his own. Go ahead, Mr. Jeffries. Tell the man the way you told it to me.
I was taking a shower, Mr. Clover. That's all I was doing. I was getting ready to go out to dinner. I'm a salesman, Peerless Leather Goods Company. And I've been with the company for 10 years. Badge of merit for my enterprise. Stick-to-itiveness.
You were taking a shower, Mr. Jeffries.
Yes. Well, I dressed. I come out of the shower. And there she was, just like that, lying on the floor. Well, I was shocked. I tried to wake her, throw her out. But she was dead, choked to death.
How do you know she died that way?
What, the marks on her throat, the bruises. Didn't you see them? You must have seen them.
Who was she?
I never saw her before in my life.
May I? Thank you. Girl's Elaine Hill, works in the perfume shop in the lobby. Won a prize for being such a good sales girl. A week on the town, a plush room in this plush hotel. Everybody in the hotel has seen her, knows her, but not Mr. Jeffries. A beautiful girl like Elaine. Never saw her. Mr. Jeffries never...
How did she get into your room?
The door was unlocked.
Oh?
Yes, well, that doesn't mean anything, does it? I left it unlocked because I'd ordered a drink.
It was brought to you?
Yes. And that's how I can prove I didn't do it. Just at the moment the bellboy brought the drink, he just walked in. Just at that moment, I was coming out of the shower. We found the girl again. Just ask him. That's all you have to do. He can prove I didn't do it.
The bellboy, Graham. Who was he?
Fred Chandler. He's at your disposal anytime you want him.
Keep him that way. Where's the girl's room?
Down the hall. I'll go with you.
Just give me the pass key.
Then you believe me. You believe I didn't do it.
You'll have to be taken to headquarters.
Oh, you can't! You can't do that to me! My reputation, my business, all the years I've worked. You can't! I won't go!
It goes like that. Violent death produces its own afterimages. The people who are suddenly thrown against it are scared, they're cooperative, they're uncooperative, it bores them. Depending upon their own attitude toward violence and their own conscience. Milburn Jeffries was screaming when the police led him out of the room. Joe Graham was grinning when he gave me the hotel pass key. Me? The sense of sorrow for a dead girl is a luxury that a policeman allows himself in the moments in between. It took a moment to walk down the corridor to Elaine Hill's room.
She ain't here anymore, mister.
Yeah, I know.
So bye-bye.
On your feet, friend. What are you doing here?
Gaze at me and you shall know. I'm sitting here smoking a cigarette. You gaze, now on your way.
Police.
Oh, a magic word. You see, I get up, I stand at attention. Have a whim. Go ahead, have one. I'll make it come true. Bellhops get paid for making whims come true. They stick you in this uniform and...
Yeah, enchant me with your name.
Fred Chandler, Bellhop.
Who is it, Fred? Fred? Who are you talking to? Oh.
Police.
My name's Danny Clover, Miss...
Lee. I'm Anna Lee. I work here, you see.
You're a maid?
Oh, no. The cigar counter's where I really work. Downstairs in the lobby. I'm on my supper hour.
A supper hour. She's my girl, so she likes to be with me, so she's helping.
Yes, I'm helping Fred.
Helping him do what?
Oh, I get it. You're collecting information to help you solve a mysterious crime. I'll unfold it for you. Helping me do what, you say? Helping me pack Miss Hill's clothes.
Who told you to do that?
Lane Hill. She was checking out. She said, see that my clothes are packed. She give me a dollar. Puts me under obligation. Personal obligation. Now that she's dead, my work still goes on.
Leave her clothes alone. Officer Florio will take care of them. One more thing, Fred.
Quiz me?
Were you in the room when Mr. Jeffries discovered the girl, the dead girl?
Jeffries said that? He said that, huh? He fibbed. He told a big, big fib. I brought in his drink, and there he was, standing over Miss Hill.
Yes. Yes, that's the way it was, Mr. Clover. That's just the way Fred told me it was. Fred's telling the truth. He's not in trouble, is he? Fred's not in trouble, Mr. Clover.
Don't worry, Miss Lee. Fred's not in trouble. But keep an eye on him. Keep an eye on each other, huh? The girl's hand touched Fred's sleeve and he flicked it away. Then he crossed the room ahead of me, opened the door, and bowed me out. Around Elaine Hill's death, there already grew the fungus of lies, of half-truths, the weeds of a new violence. To tear them out, I needed to know more about Elaine, how she lived, how she worked. There was a man who could tell me part of it, a man named Nicky Laszlo, dealer in perfumes in the lobby.
All I know of Elaine, Mr. Clover, is beauty she was. Employee of myself, but nevertheless beauty. Sheer exquisitatic. In my spare time, I coin new English words.
Mr. Laszlo,
pardon me. I want this would be put in the official records. You keep such records? Of course you keep. In this country, everybody keeps.
Mr. Laszlo...
I want you should put down salt on the person of Elaine Hill. The perfumes of Nicky Laszlo smelled better than on person of any other person. That, you see, is my eulogy over my poor dead Elaine for publication.
Touching.
Change smelled to had more fragrance, but has more sorrow in it. Agreed? Agreed.
There could be sorrow in it for you too, Mr. Laszlo.
Is already. I deserve more.
If you don't answer questions directly without coining new words. Agreed?
This is your country. I am only here on good behavior. Question me, Mr. Clover.
Think back. Did Elaine ever say anything to you? Do anything that might show that she was afraid?
Of being killed?
Of being killed.
No, not once. Except only once. But not, I think, of being killed.
Of what?
She didn't tell me.
Didn't tell you what? Answer me, Laszlo, before I get...
Before you hurt me? I tell you. Last week came call from room 302. Wanted Elaine to exhibit perfume personally, this 302. Elaine took quickly atomizers, went and came back with atomizers. But with tears in her eyes. I asked her, what? She told me nothing. Just cried and blow her nose. That's all.
That's all?
That's all, Mr. Clover. The whole thing. All.
And it goes on. Elaine Hill had been called to room 302 to sell perfume. And she returned with a tear. I went back upstairs to the lobby and spotted Joe Graham. I told him to find out who occupied room 302 last Thursday. It would take some doing, Joe Graham said, because the books were snugged away for the night. But he was just the boy who could find out anyhow, he assured me, because he had influence around here. I assured him that was dandy to let me know. He winked, and I went back to headquarters. I got as far as sitting at my desk.
I shadowed you into your office, Danny.
I see you did, Tattaglia. Why did you?
To offer you the hand that helps.
All right. Help me, Tattaglia. Who killed Elaine Hill?
Huh?
Who killed Elaine Hill?
Danny, you're fighting me. You know, I have a new approach in the solution of, as it were, crimes. You want to hear?
Tell me.
Give out word to the newspapers that you will arrest the criminal at any moment. Only don't say what moment. This makes an emotional person like a criminal emotional, nervous. And seeing that the die is cast and the vice is turning, he will give himself up.
Pardon me, Tattaglia.
Or hang himself. Hey, what do you think of it?
Danny Clover speaking.
Joe Graham. Here's what, Danny. Nobody registered in room 302 last Thursday. The room was empty.
You're sure?
He asked me to find out, and I found out. Sure, I'm sure. Don't look the way you're looking, Danny. I got juicy news.
Like what?
Tell you what. Have a shave with me, and I'll tell you.
A shave? What are you talking about, Joe?
In the barber shop in the hotel.
But it's after midnight. The shop's closed.
Sure, but I got influence, like I told you. Look, Danny, I'm going off duty. I got a date. I gotta shave myself. Join me, huh? For the juicy news, huh?
For the juicy news, huh? He said, and he hung up. It took 10 minutes for the squad car to get me to the hotel. In the early hours, the building stood like a sullen pile against the night. The nighttime was beginning to die in the lobby. The dimness had started, the talk more hushed, and there was no laughter. Downstairs, the light bled through the lowered blinds of the barber shop onto the tiled floor. And somewhere far away in the world of the bar, a band had settled down to a waltz tempo. I walked to the door of the shop, opened it. Joe Graham was standing there, back toward me, propped against a corner, a hand resting on a tray of tonics and towels and brushes. Joe, what's the matter with you? Joe. What was the matter with Joe? It could never be fixed. The unfelt pain forever stamped on his face told me that. And the unseeing stare and the blood. Joe Graham was dead. The thing about Broadway, at lunch hour, it takes its murder spliced between nibbles and a hot dog and washes them down with cream soda. The deaths of Elaine Hill and Joe Graham were spectacularly headlined, so Broadway nodded approval and reached for the onions. It's these usual things that gives Broadway assurance all's right with the world. The only thing Broadway has to worry about is the hours between now and pudding time. In my office at headquarters, Sergeant Tattaglia stood in the center of the room, shifted his position a few times, cleared his throat, then asked me a pointed question.
What time is it, Danny?
Why?
Well, no particular reason. This question was just an opening gambit for the conversation which is about to ensue.
You tricked me, huh, Tattaglia?
But, Danny, I've been standing right here before you, trying to catch your attention. For 10 minutes as the crow flies.
Okay, what is it?
Reports gathered from hither and yon into the here.
Mm-hmm.
To wit, the boys from technical are even now examining the clothes of Elaine Hill for possible clues as to the reason for her decease.
Go on.
In the matter of Milburn Jeffrey, the leather goods salesman apprehended at the scene of the crime, also to wit, he is now under the excellent care of Dr. Sinsky.
Oh, what's the matter with Milburn Jeffrey?
The occupational disease of all those who are arrested as suspects for murders. He's screaming to let him out of jail. He's screaming he ain't guilty. He's screaming he's a victim of cruel fate.
So?
The other tenants are complaining about all this screaming. So, between Jeffrey's screaming and the others complaining, our pokey is indeed a veritable mishmash.
Uh-huh. Now, tell me what's news about Fred Chandler.
Of Fred Chandler, the bellhop, I have the following report. Fred Chandler has been employed at his current place of business for nigh on to 6 years. No complaints. As far as can be determined, his story checks.
And his girlfriend from the cigar counter, Anna Lee?
To wit, Annalia's his girlfriend, has enjoyed the status quo for nigh on to 2 years.
One more item, Tartaglia. What about the owner of the perfume shop?
His name is Nicky Laszlo.
Tartaglia?
And Laszlo spent his time amongst the perfume at the time of the crime. Check. But I know something maybe you don't know, Danny.
Like what?
Elaine Hill shared an apartment with a lady who ran the photography salon at the hotel. A lady named Millie Starr. Did you know that, Danny?
Goodbye, Tartaglia. At the photographer's salon, they told me Millie was on the hotel roof taking publicity stills. On the hotel roof, Millie was doing just that. A small camera dangled from her throat and her mouth was full of pins. A tall girl, shivering in a swimsuit or rompers or something or other, had her back to her, and Millie was pinning up something or other. A tuck here, a tuck there. 3 other models tried to arrange their photogenic little features on the cold asphalt of the rooftop. They were outfitted for a summer in the city on top of a hotel. One strummed a badminton racket. The other waved a canoe paddle, and the third ran languid fingers through the hair of a wax dummy dressed in McGregor clan shorts and McTavish clan dinner jacket. When the dummy turned out to be a man, I thought it was time to break it up, which I did by tapping Millie on the shoulder.
Whoever you are, go away. We're busy. Okay, Teffy, you look real sexy now. Go drape yourself on the ledge, and I'll shoot you from here.
I'm from the police, Miss Starr.
Take the pins out of my mouth if you want to talk to me.
Huh? Oh, yeah. Pardon me.
Thanks. That's good, Taffy. A little more, dreamy. That's it. That's it. Now keep it. You, take this reflector and hold it just like this.
Huh?
The reflector. The reflector, like this.
Oh, like this?
Peachy keen, you were born to it. Taffy, take a deep breath. Hold your stomach in. Good. Now relish it. Got it. Now dream somebody else.
Maybe you didn't hear me, Millie. I said I was from the police.
I heard you. Get into your uniform and I'll take your picture. You can put the reflector down now.
Thanks. Elaine Hill, Millie. They tell me you shared an apartment with her.
Oh, Elaine. Take a break, slaves. You may smoke. That's right. It's just what you think. The law wants me for murder. You want me for murder, Mr. Policeman?
Maybe. But first, let's just talk.
About Elaine? I've been trying not to do that. I've been trying not even to think about it.
Why, Millie? Tell me why.
Because you're a policeman, you think you understand?
I can try.
Try hard, Mr. Policeman. How do I tell you what Elaine was to me? A child, like a daughter? Sometimes... You know, there's nothing written down anywhere that gives you the right to probe into me like this.
We want Elaine's murderer. You want that too, don't you?
That'll bring her back? You making me an offer? Catch the murderer and that'll bring Elaine back?
How long did you know her?
Not long enough. She came to me about 6 months ago, wanted to be a model. I wanted to help her. She liked my apartment, and I invited her to stay with me. Then she got tired of modeling, wanted to work steady, she said. So I got her the job in Laszlo's perfume shop. Maybe I shouldn't have done that.
Why do you say that?
She hadn't worked there a week when she started getting letters.
That's unusual.
Not for a beautiful girl like Elaine. You know the kind of letters. Anonymous. Words written in basic English. In some circles, I hear they call them love letters.
You saw them?
No. Elaine always burned them, then washed her hands.
You didn't try to trace them? Didn't report them?
No. That was my fault. I told Elaine it wasn't important. Told her it was a kind of flattery. She was so lovely.
The postmark, you must have seen that. Where were they from?
Why, from this hotel. Hotel stationery. You think...
Call your slaves back, Millie, or you'll run out of daylight.
Hey, Danny! Hey, Danny!
Yeah?
Hey, Danny! Danny!
Okay, okay, here I am. What do you want, Tartaglia? I'm in a hurry.
Whoa.
Huh?
Whoa. I'm catching my breath. I'm glad I caught you, Danny. John Gordon and Technical's been buzzing your phone all the time you are out.
Let's go find out what he wants. Did he tell you what he wants?
No. Uh-uh. Just called. I answered the phone. He said, was you there? I said, no. He hung up. I've been spending half the afternoon listening to a stupid conversation like that.
Come on. Hello, Gordon.
Something I can do for you, Lieutenant?
Bataglia said you've been trying to get in touch with me.
Well, now...
Am I going to have trouble with you, Gordon?
Why is it you're never around, Lieutenant? What do you do all day long?
You've been calling to find that out, huh?
I'll tell you why I've been calling. Here. Well, look at this. Go ahead, read it.
So, it's an autopsy report from Dr. Sinsky on Elaine Hill. I've already seen it, Gordon.
I know it almost by heart. It's part of it. Here, right here. Elaine Gordon was 5'3", blonde hair, no birthmarks, weight 119.
My congratulations on your memory. You really proved it to me.
Then why did you send these dresses down here?
For usual reasons. Follow standard operating procedure, kid. Maybe you'll come up with an interesting fact that'll tell me why Elaine Hill was killed.
These are not Elaine Hill's clothes. Somebody on your detail loused up, Lieutenant. I thought you should know. Somebody mixed up somebody's clothes with Elaine Hill's clothes. These dresses on my desk would fit a woman who weighed about 160, I'd say. Would be about 5'1", I'd say.
What are you talking about?
Don't make me repeat myself. These dresses cannot belong to Elaine Hill.
Who brought these dresses back to headquarters, Tartaglia?
Officer Florio, Danny.
Get him. Get him quick. Tartaglia did. In 10 minutes, Florio was standing in the middle of my office, wiping a crumb off his chin. He was just having a bite, he told me, at the hamburger stand across the street. Yes, he'd packed Elaine's clothes all himself, neatly. No, he hadn't stopped anywhere for a bite or for anything. He brought the suitcase with the clothes right to headquarters, right to technical, as I ordered. I thanked him, sent him back to finish his bite, got on the phone. Someone else had handled Elaine's clothes. I needed to talk to him. At the hotel, they told me he wasn't in. Try his rooming house. I did. At his rooming house, they told me he wasn't in. Try Anna Lee's rooming house. I did. On the fourth floor landing, I heard the sobs that came from Anna's room. I knocked. No one answered. So I walked in.
You knocked, Clover. That was nice of you. But walking in? How do you know what can happen to you if you just walk in?
What's the matter, Anna? Why are you crying?
Because
Fred... I'll tell you because, Clover. Because I come to take her out, dinner, a movie, dancing. Anything a little heart desires, that's why she's crying. My little Anna's overcome with it all.
Not that, Fred. You know it isn't that.
I want you to look good, honey. I want to be proud of you. When you walk into a restaurant, I want to be proud. Too much to ask.
Get away from her, Fred.
She's my girl, Clover. Makes you jealous I'm so close to her.
Get away from her.
Pleasure.
Tell me why you're crying, Anna.
Because he wants me to look good. You know how, Mr. Clover?
Hmm?
He brought over a girl's clothes. He wants me to put them on. He won't go out with me unless I put them on. He won't kiss me unless I put them on.
Shut up. Don't come near her, Fred. The clothes. Where are they, Anna?
Over there. On the bed. Wrapped in the newspaper.
Elaine Hill's clothes, Fred?
And that girl's clothes. And you wanted me to put them on. Oh, Fred! Fred! What's the matter with you? What are you...
Elaine's clothes, Fred?
I bought them in a hock shop for my girl, Anna, because Anna's my girl. I want it to look nice, to look classy. Like a dream.
Like Elaine? You couldn't get near Elaine, so you killed her. You wrote her letters, and she never answered, so you killed her. And Joe Graham, because he found out it was you who called Elaine to room 302. Was it like that, Fred?
You're frauding at the brain, Clover. That makes you a mad dog.
And the clothes, you stole them after you killed her, because that was all of Elaine you could own. You stole them and palmed some others off on the police.
They told me the girl was found in a salesman's room. I was there when they told me.
You put her there. You strangled her and put her there, because you knew the door to Jeffrey's room was unlocked, that he was taking a shower and couldn't hear you. Anna?
Give them to me. Give me your clothes. I'll show you how I wear them, Fred.
No more killing, Fred. No more.
Thank you.
night, Danny?
Go home, Tartaglia.
Come have dinner with us, Danny. With Mrs. Tartaglia, there's always plenty.
Go home, Tartaglia.
Yeah, Danny.
April evening sighs down on the city like a phosphorescent dream. You walk it slowly because it's a twilight land. Then fingers claw at your elbow, a face leans close to yours, and the words it whispers are a shriek. It's suddenly night, and the world's exploded. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway, my beat.
Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover with Charles Calvert as Tartaglia. The program was produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. The musical score was composed and conducted by Alexander Courage. Included in the cast tonight were Virginia Gregg, Joyce McCluskey, Elliot Reed, Jack Crucian, Ed Max, and Anthony Barrett.
Personal notice, dangers my stock and trade. If the job's too tough for you to handle, you've got a job for me, George Valentine. Write full details.
Standard Oil Company of California invites you to Let George Do It. In just a moment, we'll begin tonight's adventure of George Valentine. Sometimes you drive in the country, sometimes in town. Shift to the gas with all eight for top all-around performance wherever you drive. Yes, Chevron Supreme Gasoline gives you all eight high-performance qualities in correct balance. Mileage, acceleration, power, anti-knock, vapor lock prevention, starting, warm-up, and area blending. So for top all-around performance, fill up with Chevron Supreme Gasoline at standard stations and independent Chevron gas stations where they say and mean, we take better care of your car. And now, tonight's story, A School of Sharks, another adventure of George Valentine.
For you in a... Dad? Huh. It's funny. Well, at least he was here. If he went out to play pinochle again tonight, I'll... Oh. Dearest Mary, man can be foolish and a man can be weak. You know I've been both in my time. But a man can only be a coward up to a certain point. Mary, darling, I'm trapped. Trapped by many things. Maybe mostly by myself. Maybe you can never find it in your heart to forgive me. But remember, I love you. Don't go into the bedroom, darling. But call the police. Dad? Dad? Dad! Oh, no! Yes, the funeral was yesterday, Mr. Valentine. And the boys who worked with Dad on the newspaper sent him a nice wreath. The case is very much closed.
Yeah. Well, after I got your letter, Miss Haggerty, I checked with the police. There's no question about your father's death being a suicide.
No. No question at all. Well, there doesn't seem to be very much Mr. Valentine can do, does there, dear? Loan sharks. Did you ever hear of loan sharks, Mr. Valentine?
Yeah, I heard your father was in a little financial trouble.
But why did he have to borrow so much money? Money wasn't too much of a problem with us.
No?
Father's worked on the Clarion for years in the composing room. He made a nice salary. And when I got out of high school, I went to work there, too. I'm now secretary to the managing editor.
Mr. Wells?
You know him?
Well, just slightly.
But don't you see? We had friends. We had people he could turn to.
Well, he might have owed a sum he felt he couldn't raise.
Well, he liked to gamble. That was his one weakness. But he never gambled for large amounts, and he played cards mostly with his friends.
Gambled, huh? Well, that could be one darn good reason why he had to borrow money. And from people who are easy about lending it and tough about getting it back. Yeah, that might have started the ball rolling downhill for him.
I don't know any specific facts, Mr. Valentine, but I have an idea Dad wasn't the only one in the paper who was mixed up with loan sharks.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, there are hundreds of people working for the Clarion. I heard Oscar Strike, he's the foreman of the composing room, talk to Mr. Wells about that. But, of course, there wasn't very much they knew. People just don't talk about things like that. So there wasn't very much they could do.
Which is pretty much my position, too, Mary. It's a job for the police to try to get evidence on these tough boys, break up that racket.
But that's what I'm driving at. In a way, my father was killed by them.
Mary, please.
I know Dad pulled the trigger. But who made him do it? Maybe there's no murder in the strict legal sense. If there is a murderer who must be punished. Mr. Valentine, I know the police will try and break up the loan shark racket. But I want you to help. I want you to find my father's murderer.
I'll do what I can, Mary.
Got a little cubby hole over there where we can talk better.
I'll be fine, Mr. Strike.
You sure turned out a lot of papers.
When we print the big Sunday edition, that's when this place really hums.
I can imagine. About the boys here, Mr. Strike?
Oh, they're human. Some of them get into a mess, and then they grab at anything. Borrow money from anybody to get out of it.
Well, they get good pay. Any reason this loan shark business should be more of a problem here than any place else?
Maybe.
Why?
I keep my eyes open. I sort of have an idea somebody makes things easier for the boys to get into trouble.
In what way?
Easier to get involved in gambling in the back room of some saloon around here. You lose a good chunk of dough, mister, and you can't take it out of your paycheck. Your wife expects that to keep the family going. So you grab it a chance to borrow some.
No matter what interest you have to pay.
No matter. You figure maybe you can win next time, and then maybe you don't. And in any case, there's a gorilla boy to make sure you don't fall behind in your payments.
Well, you think something like that happened to Mr. Haggerty?
Joe was a friend of mine, a good man to work with. You find out who got him on the road to where he killed himself, and you'll have lots of friends down here.
Do you know who some of the boys are who got themselves in trouble with these loans?
Oh, I could make a few guesses, but that wouldn't do anybody any good. They'd be too scared to talk. Everybody's always too scared to talk. In fact, I just as soon you forgot that I shut my mouth off, Mr. Valentine.
Jake Pagano and Stan Ringler. They're the sharks the boys in the racket squad suspect.
Then why aren't they behind bars, Lieutenant?
Because I said suspect, Valentine.
But there should be some proof by now.
Not with those two. Oh, plenty of small fish have been caught. But Pagano and Ringler can't be tied in with them. Too many people
are afraid to talk, I know.
You wouldn't be so cynical, my friend, if you saw the artistic job of man those thugs are capable of.
So we just let things go on their merry way. That's great.
The police are checking every lead they get.
Well, that'll be a lot of comfort to Mary Haggerty, I'm sure.
And they will welcome any inspired, sensational ideas anybody will come up with.
And furthermore, they could use some
okay,
ideas.
Okay. Round's over.
I'm sorry, Lieutenant Johnson.
Yeah. Valentine,
Guys like Pagano and Ringler make any honest cop see red. So we have them tailed, and we look in their bank accounts, and when we catch one of their strong-armed boys, we try to persuade them to put the finger on their bosses. No dice on any count.
Yeah, I know. Johnson, do you personally have any ideas on the subject?
I had one, but I doubt if it would work.
What kind of an idea?
Well, we have enough on both of them to be able to pick them up and keep them in jail for a while, away from each other. Then we could tell either one of them that the other finally cracked up and confessed.
Yeah, so to protect himself, our boy would sing. Sometimes that does work.
Not with those two. They'd spot the whole deal for a phony, and we'd get exactly no place.
Now, wait a minute. Unless the stunt were pulled not by the police, but by somebody they'd never suspect.
Huh?
What are you talking about, George?
I've got an idea about what to do with your idea, Johnson. Come on. Mr. Wells, the Clarion's got to help.
But, Mr. Valentine, you don't realize what you're asking us to do.
Dad always called it his paper, with pride in his voice. He'd do anything for it. The Clarion owes him this.
Do you think such a stunt would even work, Lieutenant Johnson?
It might. It's cockeyed enough.
It isn't cockeyed at all. It makes perfect sense.
Now, look, just a couple of special issues of the Clarion with a front-page story about something that never happened.
Well...
Fine, good. I knew you'd do it. Now, I don't know how long it's been since you personally wrote a story, Mr. Wells, but you're going to write one now. Get your boss a typewriter and plenty of paper, Mary.
Yes, sir.
You have a lot of work to do, Johnson, and very little time.
You bet your sweet
life. And you, Brooksy.
Yeah.
I need the shabbiest-looking suit you can find. Yep, everybody get to work, except me. I'll be very busy keeping my fingers crossed.
Well, here it is, complete with headlines.
Good, good.
Ringler confesses part in Loan Shark Racket. Implicates Pagano as real boss.
Oh, wait till Pagano sees it. He won't have a reason in a million to suspect that this isn't anything but absolute truth. He'll think it's splashed all over every paper in town.
And do some fancy singing on his own against Ringler, I know. Well, I... still worried about the Clarion's part in all this.
Is Oscar Strike down in the composing room waiting for this?
Yes. We'll run it in a couple of hours. It's part of the afternoon edition. Strike knows about a hot story coming through, and he's to handle it himself. And we've run off a couple of copies. I'll personally give him the order to stop the presses and destroy the type.
I've located a couple of pictures of Pagano and Ringler.
I'll take them. I just hope everything works out, Valentine.
He's a nice guy, Wells.
Dad always used to say he was... tough, but a square shooter. Mr. Valentine, you would have liked Dad. He wasn't really weak or cowardly.
There. You want to bet Johnson has rounded up Pagano and Ringler already?
Mr. Wells' office.
Miss Haggerty.
What, will you speak a little louder?
Straighten your ears a little, sister. What I got to say is important to you.
But, who are you?
Stop playing around with the cops and guys like Valentine. They'll be picking you up in an alley. If you're lucky, you'll just have your legs and arms busted.
Are you sure you have the right party?
What's the matter, Mary?
Don't stall for time, sister. That's all the message I got. Better remember every word of it.
Hello? Hello, wait. He hung up.
Who was it?
Nobody.
Oh. Somebody from our friends, the Easy Lenders?
No.
Now, look, kid, this is no time to play coy. They told you what they'd do if you kept hollering copper, didn't they? And we know they're not kidding. Okay, I vote we forget all the fancy plays.
What?
Why, those characters will trip up some other time, and the police will nail them then, but you'll be out of it.
Mr. Valentine, please. Please listen to me. I want to go right ahead with what you've planned. I'm afraid, but I want you to go on.
But Mary, listen, there's danger.
I'll never stop looking for Dad's murder. This way, I'll have someone to help me. The other way, I'll be all alone. Am I all alone, Mr. Valentine?
Let's get going, Mary. We're going to be very busy.
We'll return to tonight's adventure of George Valentine in just a moment. You know the old saying, a friend in need is a friend indeed. Well, One of the best friends you can have is a set of tough, rugged Atlas tires on your car. For Atlas tires are really dependable. They're made to last and last to give you safety and security on the highways. In winter weather especially, you need the kind of protection you get from Atlas tires. You'll find wide, flat treads on Atlas tires. Treads that put more rubber on the road, give you better traction. They're thick treads with good, deep grooves and hundreds of tough anti-skid edges for greater safety. And here's another important point. When you buy Atlas tires, you get a written warranty, 12 months protection against tire damage from any road hazard, a warranty that is honored by more than 38,000 Atlas dealers from coast to coast in the United States and in Canada, too. Convenient monthly budget terms are available. Whenever and wherever you're driving, remember that you get top performance from Atlas tires. No wonder folks say you're money ahead and miles ahead. You buy Atlas. Stop in tomorrow and get the facts about safe, sure Atlas tires at any independent Chevron gas station or standard station where they say, and mean, we take better care of your car. Your name is George Valentine. You get a bright idea how to trap the two leading suspects in a vicious loan racket. You carefully make all the preparations, but then you find yourself squarely on the spot. Mary Haggerty has just been warned that if she doesn't drop you like a hot potato, she will be found dead. But she insists that you go right ahead as planned.
You sure you have the girl under protection, Johnson?
Yeah, Valentine, I told you I have. She doesn't know it, but Davis and Malloy are down at the Clarion, and they won't even let her out of their sight.
Good, good.
You sure are a thing of beauty, my friend.
Oh, thank you.
What the well-dressed man won't be found dead in.
Well, if I'm going to be thrown into Pagano's cell as a common drunk, I should look as though I've slept in at least a couple of gutters. Everything work out okay so far?
Like a charm. We picked up Pagano and Ringler separately, booked them separately, and put them in different cells.
Oh, what a horrible fate for the Bobbsey twins.
Yeah. We also made sure that Pagano took a good look at Ringler being marched out of his cell later.
With a couple of photographers snapping his picture?
With all the trimmings. Pagano's eyes nearly bugged out. He tried to find out from the guard what was going on, but of course nobody told our friend anything.
Well, I shall now try to satisfy Mr. Pagano's curiosity.
Huh. Quite a story Wells wrote about Ringler's confession.
Yeah.
Too bad it never happened.
The first copy off the press. And it'll be the smallest circulation any newspaper in the world ever had.
Here you are.
Okay. I'll just tuck it carelessly in my pocket like this. And any time you get one of our politest guards, he can show me to Mr. Pagano's cell.
Good luck, Valentine. I hope it works.
Okay, thanks, Johnson. With any luck, he'll be bellowing for you like an outraged bull.
Guard! Come in here, guard!
And if he bellows like that, it won't be bad either.
And don't make too much noise in there, happy boy! Oh, thanks for the hospitality, officer. Every officer in our penal institute jail is a perfect gentleman. And every guest in our penal jail is a perfect gentleman. In fact, the whole world is a perfect gentleman. Oh, what a beautiful morning! Oh, what a beautiful... Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize I wasn't alone, sir. I do hope I have not disturbed you.
Just shut up, Mac, and everybody will be happy.
Happy? You're happy too, huh? Oh, that's nice. That's real nice. It's like I always tell an old woman, if I ever take a teeny-weeny drama to celebrate my being the happiest man in the world, I'm happy when you're happy.
Pass out quietly, Mac, or I'll do the passing for you.
Yeah, but I was just... Oh, yes, sir. I'm here yesterday. I'll just fix the cot so I don't dirty it with my shoes, and I'll be as quiet as old mouse.
Wait a minute. Give me that.
Oh, no, wait, that's my paper. Hey.
Shut up. Let me see something here. Well, what do you know?
I don't know. Look, monsieur, I just bought that paper and I haven't read it. I really think it is.
So that's what happened.
Sure, that's exactly what happened.
Nobody's talking to you, lunkhead. I'm talking about a friend of mine. A friend of mine who got out of here because he's smart. A very smart boy.
Smarter than me? Smarter than you?
No, pal, not smarter than me. Oh, Carr! Carr! I'm here with you. I want to talk to you.
Oh, that's it, baby. Tell him you want out so you can talk to the district attorney, too.
All right, all right. What's on your mind, Pagano?
Nothing. Just throw this screwball out of my cell, will you? I want to take a nap.
Oh, that worked out fine. Just fine, Valentine.
Yeah, great.
Not a peep out of Pagano. He apparently doesn't want to talk to anybody. Doesn't want to deny what Ringler is supposed to have said.
Johnson, something's phony about all this.
Why? He couldn't suspect the newspaper story. And I know as sure as I'm alive that he and Ringler are mixed up in that smelly racket.
Hey, Johnson, wait.
Huh?
Did Pagano speak to anyone at all before I was thrown in there? Did he have any visitors?
No, he didn't. He had a phone call from his lawyer.
His lawyer? How do you know?
Well, that's what the man said.
Oh, of course, that's it.
That's what?
That must be the answer. Come on, he was tipped off.
Mr. Wells?
Hey, Mary, where are you? Mr. Wells.
All right.
We called the doctor, Mr. Valentine. He should be here any minute. George, they found Mr. Wells down on the back stairway. He was slugged from behind.
Who found him and when?
I did. About 10 minutes ago.
Anybody know how long he was laying there?
I was going to the composing room.
To the composing room?
Yes.
To make sure that the type for the phony front page was destroyed?
That's right. Mr. Valentine, that means the newspaper's on the street by now.
Oh, no.
I'm afraid it's so, yes. I only hope we're not too late. Mr. Strike!
There he is, George, out on the loading platform.
I see a couple of trucks pulling away now.
Mr. Strike, wait. Stop those trucks.
What's that, Mr. Valentine?
The paper. Let me see the paper that's going out.
Oh, sure. Oh, here's a broken bundle of what?
Ringler confesses.
All these papers, all the same.
Sure, they're all the same. What's this, some sort of joke?
How many trucks left already?
Oh, half a dozen.
Headed for where?
All over town.
Well, don't let another paper get out of here, no matter what you have to do.
Yeah,
it's an order from the police.
The police? Say, look, what is this? Mr. Wells told me he'd be downstairs about something, but he never showed up.
Never mind. So. George, those other trucks, the ones that already left, how can we stop them?
We've got to stop them before a single copy of the paper gets into a customer's hands.
I'll get the police cars after them.
Tell them to stop at nothing to get every copy off the streets.
Good work, Sergeant. Okay, boys. Turn the truck around and get back. But don't be like me. You drive 25 miles an hour and no more.
Don't cut open that bundle of clarions.
What's the matter with you, lady? You crazy?
Yes, crazy as a loon, but you'll sell those papers over my dead body.
Pretty good hunting, eh, Oscar?
You can say that again, young fella.
Does that account for all the trucks that went out to this side of town?
Yeah, all of them. What? Aren't we going back to the Clarion?
No, I remembered something. I'm not a newspaper man, but doesn't the truck that delivers the papers to the railroad station leave as soon as it's ready?
Sure, that's right.
Well, the station's down this way. We better keep going as fast as we can. Brother, that's great. Now we're in the midst of traffic.
We'll never catch that truck, never.
Ride a couple of hundred feet and stop. Oh, this is fine.
It's Sandy Krause on that truck, a good man.
Can you still see it?
Yeah, way up ahead there, but it might as well be miles away. When Sandy gets the truck to the station, they'll have papers selling over the counters in a matter of seconds.
Oh, sure. And the Clarion will really be in a mess.
Yeah, one of Pagano and Ringler's boys must have knocked Mr. Wells out to keep him from stopping the phony paper, huh?
Sure. It'd be worth a lot to the loan sharks to get the Clarion way behind the eight ball. And, brother, they're so near to it with that truck just out of our reach.
Yeah.
Of course, there's one chance I could still take.
What's that?
Up there, where the other street joins this one.
I could turn off, go back half a mile, then pick up Dempster Street to the station.
Oh, you'd never make it in time.
I think I could, just in time, just by a matter of minutes.
No.
Oh, wouldn't it really be something if the Racket Boys missed out so near and yet so far? Hold on, Oscar, here's where we turn off.
No, I said no.
What? Oh, nice heavy wrench. Is that the one you slugged Mr. Wells with, Oscar? I'll bet the police could prove that it is.
Keep driving, Valentine, and straight ahead.
Sorry, I can't. I had an idea you were in on this, Oscar, when you conveniently forgot about this truck still being out. But I had to have some proof.
Those papers are going to be sold. You're not going to spoil it.
What are you
going to
do, Oscar?
If you drive anywhere near that truck, I'll kill you. Be smart and don't stop.
All right, don't wave that thing. Ask for it, Oscar. Give me that wrench. What's the matter? Dashboard hurt your face? Sorry I'm such a bad driver, Oscar, but I gotta catch that truck. Okay, Oscar. Tell the nice lieutenant you're ready to dictate a confession.
Hey, that's right. I'll tell everything. But you've got to get the court to give me a break. I'll turn state's evidence.
Now, that's real decent of you.
And you'll protect me from Pagano and Ringler, won't you?
Yeah, yeah. They'll be kind of busy protecting themselves. Come on, get started.
Yeah, sure. I got involved the same way most of them.
They put the last batch of those clarions into the furnace a few minutes ago.
Beautiful sight, beautiful.
Not a single copy got out on the street. And Mr. Wells is downstairs personally destroying the type.
George, I understand about Oscar Strike being a sort of inside man here for Pagano or Ringler or whichever one.
Oh, wait a minute, Joe. He had to be. He was on the hook just like Mary's father. Only he wasn't quite so honest.
Well, was he the one who tipped off Pagano so he wouldn't do any talking?
Sure, why not? With the papers out on the street, Ringler would have a perfect case of libel against the Clarion. He didn't really confess, of course, so he'd claim his reputation was damaged beyond repair.
Yeah, and the crazy part of it is he could have collected, almost said any amount he wanted.
That's right. I guess poor Strike figured in return he'd be let off the hook. His own debts would be canceled.
But what did he say? What did he tell the police?
Pagano? The loan racket was his.
But Ringler...
Hazel, there's a funny thing about singing. When one person starts, everybody joins the chorus. Now, Pagano is so sore, he's telling everything he knows about Ringler's racket.
But if you hadn't done what you did, the racket would still be going right on, destroying more and more lives, like my father's.
But it is over, dear, all of it.
No. No, it's not. Come on, I got a surprise for Mary.
What?
Something to show you where you're wrong.
Many car manufacturers now recommend a heavy-duty motor oil to give modern engines maximum protection under all driving conditions. New RPM motor oil exceeds the requirements of all manufacturers for this type of oil. Whichever weight you use, 10, 20, 30, or 40, remember that new RPM doubles engine life, the time between major overhauls due to lubrication. Be sure you get new RPM motor oil for your car at independent Chevron gas stations or standard stations where they say and mean we take better care of your car.
There go the trucks again to every part of the city.
Nobody has to stop them now.
Printing shop foreman exposes loan shark racket. Here it is. And isn't it beautiful?
Yeah. There's something else on the front page. A little box at the bottom there.
The editorial?
Uh-huh.
As long as there are vicious, greedy men, there will be rackets of all sorts. And these rackets will thrive and grow fat as long as they have for their ally the fear of its victims. Mary Haggerty is a soft-spoken young girl, as anxious to stay away from violence as you and I. But she knew that sometimes fear can be a crime as bad as any racket. And Mary Haggerty conquered fear. The news columns carry the story of what she accomplished. Here is an example to men of goodwill. A sure weapon against men of evil. Signed, G.V.
There isn't anyone on our editorial staff with those initials.
No, but there was. For one day only. And he meant every word of what he wrote.
Tonight's adventure of George Valentine has been brought to you by Standard Oil Company of California on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West. Robert Bailey is starred as George with Virginia Gregg as Brooksy. Let George Do It was written by David Victor and Jackson Gillis and directed by Kenneth Webb. Ken Christie was heard as Lieutenant Johnson, Virginia Eiler as Mary, Griff Barnett as Strike, Joe Vitale as Pagano, Stephen Chase as Wells, and James Nusser as the guard. The music is composed and presented by Eddie Dunstetter. Your announcer, John Heaston. Listen again next week, same time, same station, to Let George Do It. Let George Do It is heard overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.